Welcome back to the monthly Alt Pulse. I'm Michael Sidgemore, co-founder and partner of Broadhaven Ventures and founder of the Alt Goes Mainstream podcast. In addition to being joined by iCapital Chairman and CEO Lawrence Calcano for our monthly Alt Pulse, today we have a special guest in the studio, Hai Garyan, Chief Executive Officer of IRX Investment Partners. Together with Redbird Capital, an $8.6 billion private equity firm focused on financial services, sports, and media, IRX partners with wealth and asset management firms to build a differentiated platform. Taking his lessons learned and deep industry experience gained through running wealth management businesses at Deutsche Bank, Alex Brown, Raymond James, Haig and IRX also partnered with firms such as iCapital to give advisors access to private markets. Thanks, Haig and Lawrence, for joining me. Let's jump right in. Haig, let's start with you. And I want to start with the future of wealth management. Are independent platforms the new scaled firms?
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me. It's a privilege and pleasure to be here with my friend Lawrence. The question is undoubtedly one that I would answer with a yes and to some degree with a no. Yes, there will be scale in the independent wealth space, and there will be firms individually that achieve significant scale. Consolidation is inevitably going to drive some of that as well. I say no because one of the core cultural components of the independent wealth space is to not replicate much of the characteristics of the large national firms, particularly the bank-owned firms. So I think there's going to be a different kind of scale, the scale that really respects and appreciates the ownership of a book of business that an advisor has and the relationship they have with their client and holds that paramount. The basis upon which the independent world has grown has really been upon that relationship and the trust that FA has with the client. And it's not to say that doesn't exist in the large firms, but it is the core pillar of the independent wealth space.
I think that brings up a really interesting point, Lawrence, because you work with both wires and independent firms and hybrids, which you are at IRX. How do you think about working with independent or hybrid firms in addition to working with the wires?
I think the key for us is just trying to meet our clients where they are. A lot of independent clients really use iCapital broadly throughout the value chain of alts, if you will. That includes everything from sourcing funds, structuring funds, selecting and doing the diligence on funds, and then all the technology around transaction processing, the subscription, of course, and then all the aftermarket and reporting integration that are required with these investments. So for a lot of firms, it's literally the end-to-end solution that they need. Other firms don't need necessarily the product access. They might have their own set of relationships with GPs. And for those firms, we really provide the operating system, which is all the compliance capability and functionality, educational capability and functionality, transaction processing, and all the after investment activities that we can automate.
I think what you just said is a really interesting segue to, Hai, you recently started IRX in partnership with Redbird, and you are thinking about alternatives being a piece of the platform you're building. How did you think about how alternatives fit into what you're building at IRX?
From my standpoint, whether I was Deutsche Bank, Alex Brown, or Raymond James, Alex Brown, alternatives were a very important part of our business. And in fairness, iCapital, as the steward and provider of at least the infrastructure and oftentimes the solution within those alternatives, was part and parcel to our success and our growth in that space. So alternatives was inevitably going to be a part of what we were using. The client set that the firms IRX is investing in tend to be high net worth and ultra high net worth clients. So alternatives are a little bit more mature in that client demographic and inevitably going to become much more mainstream in the broader client demographic. However, our use in IRX or Ashton Thomas for that matter, or the other firms that we are partnering with and investing in, is only going to increase. In the independent world in general, RIAs and independent broker dealers, the amount of growth opportunity and upside to the proper use of alternatives is nearly infinite at this point, because we're talking about trillions of dollars of AUM, and I would believe there's less than 1% in alternative investments.
You need the rails to be able to make that happen. What would you say to that, Lawrence?
Well, I agree. I think the allocation, and I remember there was BCG did a report on sort of who owns the wealth, if you will. And I think in that report, it was November of last year, $130 or $35 trillion were owned by retail investors. And I totally agree with Haig's point, which is a very small portion of that's actually allocated to alternatives. And so there's a massive runway to go. It's so critical that as part of bringing the solution to the market, we're all committed to making sure that advisors really understand the assets, understand how they work, understand how they work in portfolios. And that way they'll be in a better position to work with their clients to provide the right solutions given an individual client's goals and objectives.
You said something before that was interesting, is that you're looking to meet clients where they have a need. That could be for wirehouses, that could be for independent firms, or hybrids. Haig, as you started to build RX and think about what capabilities you needed on the alternative side, what were the things that were high priority you needed to have, and how did you think about either building that internally or partnering?
I inevitably knew that I was going to need partners who provided plug-in turnkey platforms for certain solutions, alternatives being at the top of that list. I knew that the advisors that I wanted to build Arox and Ashton Thomas and our affiliated firms around were going to be proper advisors using alternative investments for their clients. And those new advisors that are coming into the industry today, alternative investments are going to become much more of their mainstream approach to solving for clients' needs out of the gate. I have the privilege of hindsight, being in the business for 30 years, where I have seen at least four, maybe five market cycles. And these market cycles have proven time and time again that a properly diversified portfolio really benefits clients and families, institutional investors, corporations, whoever is allocating that portfolio with their own capital benefits from having a diversified portfolio, proven time and time again. Yet the last 14 years, in many ways, gave the world the impression that just being long the market was good enough. And this was fueled by very, very cheap capital. And we need to not lose sight of that. 2022 was a little bit of an eye-opener. Well, if you were in equities, you didn't make money. If you were in bonds, you didn't make money. That will not be the last time that we have learning experiences in the investment landscape. Having a diversified portfolio with alternatives in it is a key driver of long-term success with investing. That's going to be proven out much more so over the next 14 years, in my view, than it was over the last 14 years for exactly those reasons.
I remember being in the offices of various advisors in 22 talking about alts, and I can't even remember how many times I heard an advisor say, this is why I want my client allocated to alternatives, but they weren't. And I would say, well, where do we get started? And their reaction was, well, I can't do it now. But I do think there's certainly a big element of fear and concern that everybody had, and it froze people in terms of not allocating, probably at a time when you would probably argue they should have been allocating. But I think now that the market has stabilized a lot and I think confidence has been restored, we're seeing the allocations really start to pick up.
We've obviously talked a lot about education on that point of advisors and their end clients. How do you think about educating the advisors at firms like RX?
The one thing I would say, and I don't know certainly all of his advisors, we've worked with some of them in the past, they're a fairly sophisticated group of people. And I think that really is part of the educational challenge, where there's a bunch of advisors who've been dealing with alts for a long time, who really understand it. That discussion is much more sophisticated and nuanced, has to be handled in one way very differently than how you would talk to an advisor that's much newer to the asset class, that is still trying to understand some of the glossary, if you will. In those cases, you got to take a very different approach. We've been building lots of collateral, like a partnership we had with Kaya, where we did a program called Alts Edge, which is really very basic to help people understand what's a private equity fund, how does it work, what's a registered fund, what's a hedge fund, et cetera, and really ground people in the understanding of the products and how they work. And I've said this on our show before, and I firmly believe it. This is a little bit like the old Cy Sims, if you remember that when we were younger, his old adage, an educated consumer is our best customer. I think that's as true in alts as anywhere else. Allocating or working with clients to allocate when they fully understand the products as advisors, and then making sure their clients understand and have the right set of expectations, that's where I think you can have very successful outcomes.
On that point, Haig, as you bring advisors into the fold in RX, how do you think about either looking for their knowledge of alts or educating them on alts?
Well, Michael, I will say that the concept of education to financial advisors is even more important in the independent world. As I mentioned earlier, the small amount of exposure and allocation to alts today means the use is only going to increase. So that education component of it is critically, critically important for financial advisors. And to Lawrence's point, the educated consumer. I fondly remember when I was at Raymond James, we had the Alex Brown business at Raymond James, and I was responsible for Global Wealth Solutions, which was the investment and product platform. I had the privilege of sitting alongside Tom James, who insisted on being a part of that investment committee. And it really was a privilege to be able to have that time. The man's brilliant. The way he built that organization is brilliant. But I will say his priority, number one above all, was that the clients were being advised properly by financial advisors who understood what they were presenting to the client. So whether he loved alternative investments or didn't, the key was the FA knew exactly the role it was supposed to serve inside of the portfolio, and the client understood the risk and a potential reward associated to that investment.
The other thing that's inherent in Hike's comment is this concept of long-term perspective. You need to take a long-term perspective, whether you are iCapital or an advisor or a client, in thinking about what types of products you can serve because of your own educational background or your client's educational background. When I say education, I mean with respect to the specific products. I think all of us collectively need to take a long-term view of this because there are a lot of accidents in sort of the financial history of the industry when people rush into things they don't fully understand. I remember the internet bubble back in the 90s and people buying stocks they didn't understand just because they wanted to be involved in the internet stocks. And that, as we all know, ended poorly for a lot of people. And I think there have been just repeated examples of things that end poorly because people enter into them in an ill-considered or less informed way. We feel like this industry will be really well served in terms of client outcomes by making sure collectively everybody is well educated on these products.
And that's a great point because can't go into things too quickly. These are long-term relationships with clients,
yep,
right? Both for the advisor, for a firm like iCapital, and for the end client, for advisors at Aurochs. On that point, how do you think about balancing the need to use alternatives as a differentiator for an advisor in their practice with Lawrence's comment, which is a really important piece of this?
Alternatives as a differentiator is valuable. To me, it's more of a helping you grow your practice, helping you grow your brand, helping you be a broader, more diversified, skilled FA. That's all very, very important. But the differentiator in terms of growing your practice and branding is not nearly as important as the differentiation it provides in the portfolio. Is that differentiation lowering my volatility? Is that differentiation getting me access to an asset class that is not going to go down when stocks go up or go up when stocks go down? It's a true differentiator. And what's happened is we've had the privilege of watching the wealth management profession get better and better at what they do. I really enjoy seeing how skilled financial advisors are today versus when I first entered the business, myself included. We've learned so much, and products have gotten better, solutions have gotten better, clients' understanding of what we do has gotten better. And the one constant through all of it has been the trust that the client has in the FA, that relationship. So it's even more incumbent upon and important that the FA advises in a very educated and sound manner. And so differentiation, as long as it's providing value, critically important. But sponsors, the buy side, has been forced to get better at what they do as well. And that's been a real byproduct benefit of the market cycles. Regulators, the truth is regulators are very involved. And if you view them as a partner, you can get better at what you do.
I think it's actually important for everybody to work collectively together, including with and especially the regulators, because obviously their focus is on protecting investors. And whether the people who are the investors are wealthy or not, sort of irrelevant in my opinion. The question is, are the products clear? Are they transparent? Is the information available that somebody needs to make a decision? And I think partnering with regulators, I think helping regulators understand why these assets play an important role in a portfolio, to Haig's point, and educating the regulators on the role these products can play in actually helping and protecting an investor. But I think that collaborative dialogue is really important. And I think it requires the participation of the GPs themselves, the advisors, and firms like ours as well.
To that point, Lawrence, you have a 40,000 foot view of how GPs can interact with the wealth channel and also how advisors are able to both implement alts and portfolios and differentiate themselves in a way that Hyde referenced. What have you seen both GPs and advisors do well when it comes to providing alts as either a differentiator or kind of an additive piece to a portfolio?
One of the things that's changed a lot going back to 2014 and being out calling on both advisors and GPs, the fact that both of them need to spend more time together, right? And the asset class, as we all know, has historically been very institutional in focus. Back in 2014, advisors were sort of kicking the tires on alts, not quite committed. Part of that's because of the educational thing we talked about. And many of the GPs were not that committed either because they were selling lots of their product to institutions. And I think probably what's happened is a recognition on both sides of the importance of being together, the importance both from a portfolio perspective to the advisor to give the best advice to their clients, and importantly for the GPs to understand how large and how important this channel is to their future fundraising ambitions. Now, every GP of any consequence in terms of size is very focused on this channel. They are all in different positions in terms of how many people they'll hire and the investment they make, but everybody is really focused. And that is translating into GPs stepping back and creating products directly targeted to this space. Go back 10 years ago, people were not building products for this space. Now, people are really designing products for the needs of individual investors.
That's a great point, and actually a really interesting point in the context of Hyde, your business. You're partnered with a private equity firm, Redbird. So does that, to Lawrence's point of GPs understanding how to work with the wealth channel, does partnering with a private equity firm that's forward-thinking like Redbird, does that give you a different perspective on things than maybe you wouldn't have otherwise?
I don't know. I don't think so. One of the things that was paramount when I first was considering the partnership with Redbird, and by the way, I see your AC Milan bracelet. That's yeah. quite nice.
He wears a lot of bracelets.
Yeah, I see a number of bracelets, one of them being...
I'll have to cover up the Juventus one, too.
In addition to their sports and entertainment investing, Redbird is a big financial services investor. And one of the things we talked about early on was to be clear that, yes, Redbird is a private equity investor. However, the separation between the wealth management organizations that we will invest in and partner in and Redbird product, it actually becomes harder to get your own product into those channels if you're properly acting as a fiduciary. Now, they have great product, and so FAs are asking for it, but it still goes through a very strict lens to do that. But in terms of how does it change your perspective, I don't think it does. I think as a wealth management leader, you want to be very, very careful and take the lessons you learned in the large firms on due diligence, on process, on suitability, making it clear that that same level of screening and focus and understanding of operations and understanding of credibility, the lessons you learned from the COVID crisis, from the great financial crisis, from the dot-com bubble, from the Russian crisis, from the Latin American crisis, all of those lessons need to be part of your due diligence exercise today. So no, it doesn't change the lens for us.
I do bet though, knowing Jerry, we worked together at Goldman, that because Jerry's always had a great set of relationships with some very influential, wealthy people, whether in sports, media, entertainment, and so forth. My guess is, and I don't know the numbers, you probably do better than I do, but a lot of his early investors were actually wealthy individuals that were involved in the various businesses. So my guess is he probably has a unique understanding of the opportunity that you were creating in creating RX because of the experiences he had with the investors who were very big private investors.
That's a great jumping off point. I want to end with something fun and ask both of you, in part, maybe because you mentioned what Redbird has done with something like AC Milan. I want to ask each of you real quick, what is your most interesting alternative investment? Is there a space or a category? You talk about sports as an example. Is there something that you're like, this is a really interesting category for alternative investments that maybe hasn't been as talked about or discovered yet?
after you.
I don't have one, okay. Michael. I will tell you, I'm excited about GP stakes. I think getting private clients access to really good GP stakes investing is a reflection of the evolution of alternative investing. I think that benefit, getting to a private client investor who may not be worth $50 million, is a real great feather in the cap of the trend in alternative investing. So right now I'm excited about that, but I've mentioned it before, I love multifamily housing, I always do. And finding a great sponsor to get access there is something I always think is really good for private clients.
I think one of the interesting things that's happening is the fund lives have sort of fixed. There's a 5-year investment period, maybe a 10-year end life, and a couple of years of expansion. And that's a very defined structure. But if you think about some of the great investors in the world, Warren Buffett, obviously, where he would make an investment in something and he would own it forever, that historically has not been the case with respect to private investments because of that fund structure I just described. And I think as the private equity firms put in so much time in all their upfront work, both around the industries, the companies, the diligence they do, and then over the course of being invested in a company, this is the ultimate active investment class. When we look at managers, we're really focused on who really adds value, whose portfolio companies are growing in revenue or expanding margins or growing geographically, adding products. You've got to be an active investor to actually improve that portfolio company value. And so as they do that, after so many years, they may not be done. You may not be able to, you may not want to exit a company in year 5 or year 6 just because you have to. And so the new technology around extending their investment period by moving or selling the fund to a continuation vehicle, I think there'll be things like that where people sort of break the mold maybe of a fund has to work a certain way so that for some of these great investments, they can hold on to them for a much longer period of time.
Slow is smooth, smooth is fast, right? Both said it. Wealth management's a business of patience.
Yep.
Investing in private markets can and should be, in many respects, a business of patience. Why we're seeing continuation vehicles, evergreen funds. You both encapsulate that, both in the businesses you're building, both in how you think about investing. So it's a great conversation. Thanks so much, both of you, for coming on Monthly Alts Pulse, our new structure.
Yeah. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
I'm Michael Sizemore. See you next time on the Monthly Alts Pulse.